Hello.
Industry tactics.
Hello and welcome back to Industry Tactics. On the podcast today, the great Tor Lukasik Foss. We talk about, I go way back with Tor, way back to the days when I would curate the Brampton Indie Arts Festival, and I remember him putting him in doing his yodeling in the bathroom at the Heritage Theater. Fond memories of that. Everything he touches is of quality. He makes really beautiful art and music. He's releasing the we learn the term mini records in this episode. We talk Hamilton, art, choirs, and community, and of course donuts. We do this one live. So pardon the guck sauce, we do it live at Grandad's Donuts, the institution in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. So enjoy it. This is episode 179 of Industry Tactics, my chat with the great Tor Lukasik Foss.
Listening to this man order a dozen. Great soundscape here at the Grandad's Donuts in Hamilton. Good to be back.
All of Hamilton is behind you.
Here we are with Tor. Oh, let me try again. It's morning here in Hamilton, and I got the grit in my my throat. We're here with Tor Lukasik Foss. Did I get it?
Lukasik Foss is good.
I always Lukasik. Okay, yeah. Tor Lukasik Foss, a.k.a. You don't Tiny Bill Cody anymore, do you? Or do you?
Well, that's it. We can talk about that because okay. I pulled Tiny Bill Cody out, but I'm at the point where I think Tiny Bill's ready to retire, and Tor Lukasik Foss will just be like a...
Yeah, I mean, you've got...
24/7 enterprise.
If you've been gifted Tor Lukasik Foss, I think you got to run with that.
Yeah. It was mostly logistics, because I did these albums under Tiny Bill Cody, and then I felt bound to them, right?
Of course.
That's
always a weird thing, eh, with artist names and... nonsense like that, but you're here on Industry Tactics, and we are at... Hey, gentle listener, I know you're usually used to a more prudent approach, but we're saying embrace the noise. We're at the
premier donut shop in Hamilton, Ontario. So premier and so lauded is Grandad's Donut for really taking like the keepers of whatever 40 years ago made Tim Hortons special in the eyes of this city where Tim Hortons was born.
Oh, no, Tim Hortons was born in Canada, in Hamilton?
Yeah, the first...
I didn't even know that.
The first Tim Hortons is on Ottawa Street.
Oh, sick.
Close to Cannon. It's now got the Tim Hortons Museum in it.
Yeah.
Just like, if you're a purveyor of like kind of unsatisfying museum experiences, like tiny museums.
Yeah.
Go to that. It's like, because, you know, Tim Hortons is a relatively soulless kind of chain now, right?
Yes, yes,
owned
yes.
Owned by Brazilians.
Yes.
And part of Wendy's and
yes.
whatever. And they managed to muck it up.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Like, to me, cosmically, the thing to do, because they had a chance of keeping the Ottawa Street kind of original to how it was built. It kept on to its kind of brown and yellow aesthetics for longer than any other Tim Hortons that I knew. And then, you know, they had the chance to preserve the first one as like a thing. And it would have been amazing.
And they didn't.
It would have been like the most
gone.
Popular place ever because you could go in and like sit on the weird thing and see the...
Yeah, yeah.
People butting their smokes out on the,
yeah,
on the Formica. And,
yeah.
You know, that's what people remember.
Yeah.
And then this place was the keeper of that.
Okay.
And they've now just recently renovated.
Yeah, yeah,
the
renovation
is like a bit controversial, right?
Oh, really?
It's like...
Yeah, because you can't sit in a booth anymore.
You can't kind of... It's not quite what it was, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of like... Got the takeout window. They're more like...
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh, do they barter a little bit of their soul?
Gentle listener, we're now sat at like a... Well, how would you describe this? It's not a booth. In fact, we're not making eye contact as we speak. We're both looking out onto James Street into a parking lot. And it's buzzing here. It's March break if you're paying attention in real time. And Granddad's is always buzzing, whatever the controversy
it's
is.
It's always buzzing. Like, to me, ultimately doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And, like, they've kept the orange and the yellow, right?
Yeah, okay.
The 70s,
okay.
Okay. 70s mod
okay.
colors.
Yeah, yeah. Even in the Turlet, there's a orange and yellow theme.
Yeah.
As you go in there and make your orange and yellow.
Yeah.
Do you orange? Is your number two orange like mine?
My number two.
Okay, stop.
I should have checked.
Let's
I should
stop.
Have checked because that just happened just before coming here.
yeah.
And I didn't know it would be weirdly. I didn't know it would be part of the interview.
Yeah. Well,
so
here we are. Here we are.
I didn't check.
Well, you come with two buttons, or what are these patches?
They're patches. You iron
wow.
them on.
So iron
you,
on.
You just put them. You reverse iron them on, and they all glue.
I see. Okay. And one says psychic, and one says not psychic.
Yeah, depending on how you self-identify. I thought you, knowing what I know of you.
Well, look, I just predicted the color of your turds.
Well, I think, but also, also think, you know, you sort of preach the aesthetics of doubt to some degree, so I thought you might rock both of them.
Oh, thank you. One
you
on each arm.
You might actually like to
yes.
be both simultaneously.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I will wear them proudly. Thank you. That's exciting.
Mm.
How have you been, man? I haven't seen you since we shared a stage pre-pandemic. I know we had a little chat in the middle of it all, but how have you been?
I've been okay.
Yeah.
I've been on a bit of a journey, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you want.
That's what we're here for.
We're going to get into that. So,
dig.
Yeah. All right. So
I'm going to eat a donut, though.
Pre-pandemic, I was working on.
Chocolate glazed.
Yeah.
I'm going original chocolate glazed. If you want to guess, Tor went old-fashioned glazed.
I do, yeah. The donut of my father.
Now, I'm going to come clean, gentle listener. I came early, and this is my second donut.
Nice.
But no one's keeping score. The donut of your father. You're heavy, man. You're heavy.
Yeah.
I've known this.
My dad was he would do old-fashioned glazed. Mm-hmm. He would only ever have vanilla ice cream at the Baskin-Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like Norwegian. He was like very like keep it minimalist.
Yeah, well,
sleek Scandinavian.
Okay,
your choices.
And he went black tea as well, gentle listener. So now we're ready to dig.
Hmm. Okay, you want the story in a nutshell?
Well,
yeah, I can give you a little arc. I'll give you a little arc because as you know, I was working. Full-time, straddling this full-time gig at the Art Gallery Hamilton as the director of programs and education. Great team at the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Mildly cult-like in its ability to suck you in,
mm-hmm.
right? So you work at the gallery. You're kind of working there during the day. You're kind of working a little bit on nights in the weekends.
Yeah.
You love the people there, so you're kind of socializing with those people as well. And it's very consuming. Very difficult to be a dad. And then very difficult to be a dad who also has aspirations of making visual art and performing as well. Like, it's kind of an impossible straddle.
Okay.
So as I'm going up to the pandemic, I'm thinking maybe I need to step back from work so I can kind of just double down a little
bit on
the things that matter, my family and my creative work.
Yes.
So I started making a record. And I sent you a couple of the MP3s from what that was.
And what's the name of that record?
It was called The Devil Will Give You Candy.
And here it comes now. You know what? Because it's a podcast and we can eat donuts while we're listening, why don't you cue up one of the tracks that you sent me? Let's just go right into listening.
Okay. I'm gonna feign queuing like I'm operating gear right now.
We're
I'm
here,
the and this on the turntable.
And this
right
will
now.
Air on CFRU live in Guelph at some point in the future. So, cue it up like you mean it, like a true radio host.
All right, let's listen to "Call of the Wild." It's a song that's very dear to me. It's We laid it up really simply in the studio. It's I've got an amazing backup band, two-person backup band, Tressa Levasseur.
Oh, God,
You know Tressa?
Yeah.
She does backing vocals and concertina or accordion, I'm not sure which.
Okay.
And then Michael Ratz, who's a really good upright bass player. So, and it was all recorded by a guy named Michael Chambers, who's a really sweet, lovely guy, released on Maisonneuve Music.
Right on.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Looking for an answer that was well outside the ordinary. She handed out papers up and down along the valley. Anyone whose heart is pinned to something heavy join me. Come with me, I'll set you free, I'll set you free. She found herself a room that was large and wide and empty. And she dragged across a broom and cracked a door to draw a breeze. A place for all of us who share an affinity. To breathe. Together, breathe, that's all we need. And then one by one, we'll drag in the cages and we'll stare at the faces of the wolves inside the cages and we'll make the call of the wild. We'll make the call. Together in the wilderness, all of us, every one of us. If we all took that thing that was so heavy in our belly and spat it up and laid it down into the ground as if it were a kind of seed. What new circumstance is it that we'd be setting free? Something difficult. Something revolutionary. So let's one by one, we'll make ourselves courageous and we'll steady up our gazes and open up the cages and we'll make the call of the wild. We'll make the call. Every one of us, together in the wilderness, all of us, every one of us.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a beautiful record. You could check it on Spotify or any of the streaming sites. The devil will give you candy. And I heard you play some of those tracks pre-pandemic.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, on stage in Hamilton, and it blew my mind.
Oh, nice.
You're one of those artists that like first listen, and I'm just going, damn, because it's. You got the good stuff, the punch, the good, great feel and the whole thing. And I don't know, there's something about the way you, everything I've ever heard in terms of your output has always done that to me and continues to, so.
Well, it means a lot, you know, and not to be too like Sammy Maudlin about it, but like I appreciate hearing from you because you're one of those musicians that always intimidates me because you're kind of fearless in what you tackle and how you approach it, and there's a kind of like really amazing visceral edge to your performance. I always feel like I'm way more cautious, right? Like, but I think I've like settled a bit. Like, there's craft in all of it.
That's interesting.
You go where you feel your capacities are alive, or the most alive, right?
But and it's got to be as natural as it can be. And
it's got to be natural. Natural is a really good landing point because I always thought I had to be weirder. I had to be more out there. I had to be breaking more rules.
Right.
I had to be doing this.
Right.
And I would always settle back into my love for like traditional song form or my love for acoustic instruments or just good harmony. Like I just, those things just always are, I'm always running back to them.
Yeah. Well, kudos. Cause this record sounds amazing. So, okay. So that was pre-pandemic. You were starting to think about doing that or I threw us off the rails with a song, but
sure. So the plan was to like make an album in a couple of parts. So I had this vision of doing these like mini records. Devil Will Give You Candy is like four tracks.
Yeah.
And
Interesting. And mini records. We haven't heard this before on the podcast.
No.
Well,
like not an actual record, but I was Mizzen of Music is an all digital label.
Okay.
So I was working with them.
Great.
And the idea was bundle up four, release four, support those four while you're recording the next four, and then maybe do that three times and then put out a record or put out like a CD or press something, right?
That's beautiful.
That was the plan.
Okay.
So I do the first one, get everything ready, feeling really stoked, and literally it was like the launch was April 19th, with 1 month after the pandemic started.
Wow.
So the whole thing.
Wow. Yeah.
Deflated.
Yeah,
also,
sure.
Because I was working at the Art Gallery Hamilton, the gallery freaked out during the pandemic. Like we didn't, for a lot of reasons, it wasn't in our interest to just shut down, to shutter up and wait out the storm. We felt we had to be responsive. So I had to teach a team that was only, you know, skilled at bringing people together, working with tactile things. We were the most non-digital like programming team you could imagine, and then we had to switch to a lot of people did to doing everything remotely, doing that. All our whole school program had to be from on-site to remote, so it was just, I had to lead that department through a huge transition. So in light of that, that little recording kind of sort of just flew to the background. I didn't know how to. I tried to do some online, as you tried, I'm sure. You do some online things.
Sure.
You feel this sort of like
that. You feel the void,
emptiness of like playing for emoticons and like you know.
I don't think I did that much.
Digital hearts.
That's a very big conversation. The whole in that moment in March, April, whatever it was of 2020, pivoting and whatever that meant for all.
Yeah,
of us.
and then the pivoting meant.
Yeah.
Like pivoting meant really like true pivoting. Like I sort of let the album drift back and then we worked on a digital theater piece for that year's Fringe with two great artists, Karen Anchetta and Lisa Pijuan Nomura.
Oh, I know Lisa. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know. Yes, yeah. Yes. So Lisa, so we had worked out a way to share a video camera and do these like investigations of performing for yourself in your home.
Wow.
We called it Lullabies for Tiny Spaces.
Of course you did.
And then it And then the music was coming out of my part of that, so I was like writing these little songs for it. And
is that almost like the next bundle in your head?
I thought this is the next bundle. It's good. I'm seeding all this stuff for recording. And
what did you call the term? Miniature releases.
Like a mini album?
Mini album earlier? That's what you call or a bundle. I can't remember what you called it earlier.
Neither could I.
Okay.
I called it something cool.
I feel like it could have been a term that's a little more exciting to me than a EP, because that's just kind of...
EP, yeah.
Is EP like, the smaller, or is LP the smaller?
LP was the full length.
EP was the smaller. Yeah.
Like in the 80s, I remember the EP as being like, I don't have enough money for a real record. I'm buying this thing.
Let me treat myself.
I'm going to have the song that I like and three shitty versions of that song to listen to. And I'll be so unsatisfied.
And
then I'll never really ever play it.
Yeah.
That's what an EP is to me. So I don't think I could use that in good conscience.
Okay. A mini. Anyway, what's with you and tiny things?
So, because I'm very tall, right? So the juxtaposition of that.
You enjoy that.
Embracing the word tiny.
Yes.
But it's also like an aesthetic preference, I think. I like tiny rooms to play in. I like smaller crowds. I like the intimacy of things. I like the intimacy of instruments too.
Did you say tiny museum earlier too? Is everything tiny? You're the true friendly giant. But I get it. I get all that.
You remember I did a couple of impromptu concerts in a bathroom, right?
And that's how we first connected. And you said yes to that silly idea.
Yeah, and that idea of
I forgot about that.
And I think I called those obscurity shows where you're deliberately. Stripping any possibility of fame or notoriety because you're playing in a space where only seven people could fit. So it's consigned to not be, it can't be bigger than it is because it's it's physically.
Yeah.
Like that to me is really interesting. And what happens when, as a performer, you kind of abandon those notions of climbing a hierarchy or climbing a ladder and getting to bigger and bigger and bigger stages.
Yeah.
You're never really appreciating what it is about the small that is really, really good.
Yeah.
Right? Like the connection with audience in a small room is off the hook.
Yeah.
Right? And when a small audience is in a small space and they're with you, it's electrifying, right? And you can you can forge a bond with them that is just maybe deeper than you can in bigger rooms.
I appreciate that.
I was trying to deprogram myself because I think I was at one point when I was younger, I was so hell bent on trying to kind of make it get some kind of acknowledgement that I was losing the capacity to appreciate playing for people. Right? Because it was always what's the bigger thing I can do? What's this? The few times I played bigger circumstances, it was it was hard for me to admit at the time, but it was it's not as, maybe not as rich. Sometimes when the crowd's really big, particularly if you're opening up for a crowd that's large and they're not, your chances of really pulling them with you
are
limited.
Right.
So, I don't know, it was just, all these are strategies to just appreciate what you have and what you can do and appreciate appreciate intimacy, appreciate being obscure, appreciate being...
That's nice.
You know, alive and able to make art or sing with people and not have to pollute it with any of these other aspirations or anything like that.
Which are just bullshit notions to begin with. And if you could figure out a way to get to what the essence of it is anyways, you quickly realize that the rest of that's just... kind of irrelevant to the bigger thing, right?
Yeah, and then you start making that as a focus, and you realize, now my songwriting is changing because I'm leaning into these things, and the songwriting is kind of, it's been disentangled from all these weird notions of aspiration, right?
Did you find
little part of me was trying to write a Bryan Adams song is now I've freed that, and it's gone.
Thank Christ. Did you find those early works of yours? Because your discography kind of dates back to at least over 20 years ago. But I always found your work to be like, yeah, no, I didn't. You're not. It's still up there for a reason because you're behind it. But you just did you find the stuff that you released to still have that kind of weird ambition behind it? I guess we all have that to an extent in our early work, probably, right? Whether we know it or not, like.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still proud of it, is what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, yeah. I guess. Yeah, I'm still.
You're not like, oh, damn, that record. No.
Because when I worked with the label on this mini release, mm-hmm. right? Maybe that was the word I used. The
okay. Save. Yeah.
The Kathleen asked me, do you want, you know, I can easily put your whole back catalog up on Spotify.
Okay.
And then I wrestled with that because. You know, like, I don't know if this is the same for you. You listen to old stuff, and if you're in the wrong mood, all you hear are the flaws of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I hear where I'm flat. I hear where I rushed a song into being, and it wasn't quite done.
Oh, interesting.
I hear, if I'm in the wrong frame of mind,
yeah.
I can only hear glaring. And what's like, here's me being super young.
Okay.
You know, the first album that we put out is like, it's filled with all of this 90s acoustic.
Yeah.
Dare I say, kind of Moxie Fruvis-ish, kind of smug, moral certainty.
Okay, yes.
You know, like we were all kind of bitten with that in the 90s, and we all wanted to change the world and vent our thing. And so, I mean, I can hear all that in that album.
Yeah.
But again, like, it would be ego of me to just hide it and embarrassed by it.
Yeah,
like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
good. I'm glad you took that stance. Cause,
and then my fantasy is that somebody at some time will like want to like I do. Like, if you want to kind of get a sense of like what the 90s were, it's one thing to go listen to Linkin Park or Blink 182 or whatever. But if you listen to the bands that were trying. You know, and not getting anywhere, or the indie bands, like, they often, it's an often, like, more truthful or raw, container of, like, what...
What a statement, yeah.
Of what that era was,
sure.
Like, what we were trying to do.
Sure.
And often, in like, the failures reveal more... reveal more of the intent than the successes.
And you almost can make the argument, which is not a bold statement, that the more indie, probably the more honest the messaging, if it is political, because some of these bigger bands, as counterculture as they would have been, would have still been kind of funded by... So you never know how, oh no, you can't release that. Oh no, you can't release that. And maybe some of the more indie stuff. Well, I don't know. That's a weird theory, but
yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that there's
That's cool. I like the way you're looking at that.
I'm like, also like very
treasures.
Fascinated with like,
right?
You know, because I have kids and they're both into music. Both my boys are into music.
Oh my god,
and
that's amazing.
They have Spotify. They can kind of like
deep dive into anything.
So I can witness somebody. You know, I witness my child like listen to. Smells Like Teen Spirit for the first time. Like, they've not heard it 8 zillion times before, and it hasn't become ubiquity, hasn't pounded something out of it.
And so let me ask you this. Do they quickly move on to the next thing because it's trash?
Well, they kind of like, meh, yeah. Like, they're kind of like not... Yeah. It's impossible to be like...
See, I was ahead of my time in the 90s. I knew it sucked. anyway.
Yeah, I know, but there's like... It's because we're all looking at this. We're all like caught off guard in the same way, right?
Yeah.
We're all pointed in one direction, and then grunge happens, and like, what?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah,
like, and then 20 years go by, and like, oh yeah, this band from the 90s did stuff that sounded like stuff in the 60s or 70s. Like they did nothing new. Like, what's the big deal? And that to me is fascinating, right? Like,
you're fascinating, Tiny Bill Cody. We're here with. Tor Lukasik Foss. Unpack your name. Let's start there. Where do you come from? What's the deal?
Okay, so my birth name is Tor Foss, right?
Tor
is a sturdy Norwegian name given to me by a very Norwegian father.
Okay.
Came to Canada in 1950.
Okay.
And then he married my mom, who's like British-Irish, Scottish, a big mix. And then like 5, 6, 7, maybe more generations Canadian, right?
Okay.
So she's rooted in the earth here, my mom.
Okay.
And so I get the name Tor Foss. I meet Lenore Lukasik we get married.
Oh, dang.
We get married. Child brides and grooms.
Wow.
We got married really young.
Great.
And it was in the 90s, so it felt radical to hyphenate the names, right?
Super.
And share the names.
Super.
And it was, and people were like, oh, you can't do that. And like, oh, you're going to give away your masculinity if you, like, take your partner's name. And you got to be a man. And so I loved all of the...
Interesting.
It felt very brave, even though it's such a small thing.
So
then
wow.
I have...
What a name. What a name.
And Lukasik is a great Hamilton name because there's an amazing clan of Lukasiks that...
Yeah.
Probably the most noteworthy is Linda Lukasik, who is the head of Environment Hamilton, who's like one of the city's biggest environmental eco-activists. Right,
Her sister, related.
Yeah, okay. Cousins. Yeah.
Oh, neat.
So there's like, and then there's a niece, Emily Lukasik, who's like tearing it up as an actor.
Oh my God. So cool.
Yeah. So they're very. It's a really proud Polish Hamilton family, and then with lots of generations stretching back into the city too. So
okay,
her family connects to like, she had a great grandfather who was like, you know, a Barton Street milkman who with a horse-driven cart
Wow.
So it's good. Like, I feel, by family, very entrenched in this city.
And you grew up here?
I grew up here. My mom went to the same high school I went to.
Oh.
You know, like...
Wow, that's special.
Yeah. Like, it's special, and it's also pathological. Like, Hamilton also has a kind of gravitational pull, and sometimes you can feel stuck here.
Do you feel that?
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Kind of
okay.
Pull like the. I have in the past. I felt really downed here. I had feelings where I thought like, oh, I'm being a real coward for staying here.
Oh boy.
In terms of visual arts and performance, like there was a real decision that me and a number of my friends had. We were young and we kind of decided to stay here, to stay based here, right?
Yeah.
And it felt foolish. It felt like that's the end. There's no way you can have a career as a visual artist if you stay. You got to move to Toronto, or you got to go to Vancouver, Montreal, or get out of the country, or go to Berlin, or whatever. And
then
stay here and work this sort of mid-sized city felt like just crazy. And then, but it, now, you know, in my 50s, like, it's kind of, I'm so proud that happened because to fight for contemporary music in Brampton is a weird, noble fight, right? To fight for contemporary art in Hamilton is a weird, noble fight. And also you're kind of out of the spotlight, so you're also free in this way that you might not be in a bigger city.
Right.
So you creatively, you're just doing whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
And you're working to this smaller base. Maybe that's where my love of small audiences comes from, right?
Being in
a mid-sized city. So.
Wow. That's very nice. I love it, man. I love the grit of Hamilton. And we seem to be catching up in a lot of ways to, like, Hamilton could... I always used to joke around and probably joked with you back in the day when you were playing those toilets. Is like Brampton's the Brooklyn but Hamilton does have kind of that, like, it's got so much potential in its arts and culture scene. We know that, and people have tried to pick up on that. You know, they've tried to even brand it as that, which is like, God bless you for that. You know, I think that's a cool.
And
it's
that's
a cool idea. It's in the eye of the beholder, obviously, right?
Yeah. And then I'd say from like 2005 to just before the pandemic, that will be kind of chunked out as an era where the city is alert to its own culture, its own brand, its own identity, its own cultural identity, right?
Post-pandemic.
I think you're seeing the retreat of it now, sadly. This week is news going out about, Mohawk College killed their music program. So that, and it's very famous. Like, there's like so many Hamilton musicians come through the jazz program or the music program at Mohawk.
Right.
It's foundational to music in this,
city. That's sad news.
Huge. And so that's going.
Oh.
McMaster is is
and
killed,
for all the wrong
killed
reasons.
Killed all its art history, studio arts, like all of that whole. So
damn.
So there's kind of like those two things are really, and then with
that's going to affect it. That's going to literally affect the next generation because
well, when that
where will they
with
go?
The fact that
right?
it's expensive now to live in Hamilton.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you don't have
yeah.
if you don't have if you can't train to be a musician or be an artist, like the institutions aren't supporting you, the housing and the living conditions are no longer supporting you. It's not cheap and easy to work in Hamilton as it was 30 years ago.
Now, where did you study?
I went to Mac.
You went to Mac
for
here we go.
History and English degree.
True artist.
Yeah. Well, it was good. Like,
Of course it was.
Yeah. Like,
I respect that. I respect that to the end. And your visual arts practice, your musical practice, where does that come from?
Well, I always did it, right? Like, I've there's a lot of like social anxiety that works its way into my narrative.
Uh huh.
So I never had the guts as a teen to sort of get on a stage and play. So I just was a basement guy, right? I started making home recordings with like the Walkman channeled into the tape deck to then to four track recording. And so I was deep into that.
Did you have the same come around of like that wasn't a bad thing? Like with your relationship with Hamilton, finally had that moment where it's like, who cares if I wasn't on a stage? I was still developing a muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah. No. That saved me, right? Like creative work when I was young saved me. I still can't explain why I didn't go to art school or why I didn't train as a musician, you know.
Like, do you regret that?
I regret a little bit of the. I regret a little bit of learning the craft, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's like to have a little bit more music theory in mm-hmm. me. I'm always pining for that, a little bit to understand the structure of music a little bit more, like and because older it's like it's a battle of the inches, like I push myself but I find the learning is very hard,
right?
You know,
right.
And
right.
When my brain was a little bit more plastic, I think it would have been good to get some more foundations in there, but I don't know, that might be.
I asked that question to so many on this podcast, and it's fascinating to me because I feel like we all have our paths, we all have our regrets, inevitably. Like,
I think the you're time regret will go by. Regardless,
the
right?
time will go by, and it's like, oh crap! I wish I had a stronger, calf muscle, you know, in my arsenal. Or a terrible analogy, but like in your toolkit, some of the tools are less sharp.
Yeah,
inevitably.
Yeah. And I've written pieces about. Like the devil's bargain of being a jack of all trades, right? So at first I started being fascinated with that phrase, right? Jack of all trades, because it gets jack of all trades is like a compliment. Then you take that phrase and it's like you extend it
an insult.
Jack of all trades, master of none, right? And then globally, like that phrase reiterates like through cultures, right? So I think in like South Asia, there's like
variations.
Many knives in the bag, none of them sharp. What?
I was just drawing on that.
Right.
Good for me.
There's a German one that I love.
Okay, here we go. I bet this is going to be totally self-deprecating.
No, it's so good.
Okay.
It's like, it's fear the man who touches everything.
Oh, my God, Christ. God love you, our German audience. God love you. That's amazing.
Yeah, right? So, but...
Again, can you say that again?
What? Fear the man who touches everything.
I guess we're writing a song here. We didn't even know it. Tor Lukasik Foss. You are heavy. Psychic, not psychic. You are a heavy artist. Let's go back to where we started here with the pandemic and these mini releases.
Right. Okay, so...
Sorry, we got distracted.
Yeah.
Beautifully.
Okay,
beautifully.
So I do this little fringe show with...
Thank you.
With Lisa Pijuan, Karen Anchetta. That was really great, because we're using, like, again, making music, we're doing storytelling.
Yeah.
We're mashing up. I'm editing on iMovie to get this thing out so it can be posted. But yeah. It ends up working, like, tremendously well.
Had you done a lot of work in iMovie before? Okay, no. Great. Love to hear that, too.
No, just, like...
It had to be done, right?
Had to be done, right?
The grand pivot. Some way to do it. Yes.
And, you know, like, as like, averse to Apple products as I kind of am.
We're sponsored by Dell, so watch yourself here.
Okay. Seriously?
Be careful. Okay. But it's okay. Fine. You can dance around it.
As many criticisms as I may have about GarageBand and okay. iMovie,
okay.
They're weird because... Because they present themselves as tools for, like, everyone.
Okay.
They're not professional tools. If you're a real musician, you use Pro Tools or you use something else. You don't use GarageBand, right?
Right.
That's for, like, hobbyists, right? But there's something beautiful about those things because they're kind of stripped of...
Yes.
They're stripped of those hierarchies. And then they're really good...
Yeah, I got you.
They're really good entry-level... Entry-level tools.
Come
and because
on.
Suddenly, like, oh, I didn't know nothing about video editing. Oh, this makes it really easy. Okay, now I'm editing this thing, and I'm pretty happy with the result, right?
Yeah.
And
actually, I saw some of those videos that you were releasing. They were really, like, oddly you and beautiful and just like, whoa. This grabbed my attention, right? Yeah. So the...
That kind of, in the middle of the pandemic, it's like, oh, yeah, what can you do in the pandemic?
Yeah,
like, if this is going to continue. And then with Tressa again,
okay.
I had been running this group called Tuesday Choir, and it's been going now for 10 years. It's a pub choir. It's a choir that's focused for people who are averse to singing or have, like, always wanted to sing. But
how lovely. How inclusive.
Yeah. It's really good. And it's now a choir for shut-ins. We have some members who have been with it for the whole journey. They've been there for 10 years, and they've turned into amazing singers.
How do you overcome the... There's a lot of anxiety in leading a choir. Are you doing it with a guitar and you're singing?
Just the guitar. And then with the declaration that I don't know what I'm doing, right?
Fantastic.
So the whole idea was like, you've never been in a choir? Great. I've never run one. I have no idea what to do.
Also, and you've been doing that for a decade.
Decade. And
damn,
it's just
man.
Like people choose the songs. We work them out.
Where do you do it?
I have one member of the choir who, she's always used the word, she says, can you teach us the undersounds now? And I'm like, what are those? And she goes, you know, the undersounds. And she's trying to say harmony.
But
it's a way better word. And so now the choir's adopted that word in its lexicon, right? Like, and so...
Oh, this is fantastic.
Really
a whole
great.
Vocabulary. And that isn't that where notation comes from in the beginning anyways?
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah. Yeah, and you
this
see...
This snobbery
like,
of... do you need to know what a hemiola is?
Yeah.
It's a wart on my arse. You know, like get into the undersounds. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a kind of... And it's a beautiful image, right?
Yeah.
It's like this... Yeah. It's more speaks to the experience of like being in a room listening to something
and people
and what's below and people
and co-creating right with
and then there's like that hopefully that feeling of like collective authorship collective we
are you songwriting together?
No, we haven't done. I brought exactly one of my original songs to choir. And
is that because of ego? You just don't want to like make
because,
it like the tour show?
I kind of don't want to make it the tour show.
Yeah.
I kind of just want to let the choir.
Yeah. How community minded of you, almost religious of you.
Yeah, there's
that's not a bad word.
For me, there's something religious to it because at times when I've struggled with choir, it's like, well, what is this really giving me musically? I'm playing, I'm courting out these songs. It's not really
You're doing talent. It every week.
You're doing it every week.
Even in the pandemic, you figured
so
a way
So in the
out.
Pandemic, okay. So this is, off the narrative
Sorry.
Again. So in the pandemic,
that's me, not you.
Tressa Levasseur and I, we write a suite of songs for the choir.
You beautiful artists.
We tell the choir to sing their parts into their phones.
Oh my God,
Tressa GarageBand it all together into unison.
You could do this all in a Dell system too, so don't get hooked on.
We
if you're
just,
a creative.
We were just dreaming that we had Dell systems.
They thought they didn't have Dell's support. So anyway, onward.
Yeah. So
I'm ruining this
so
interview.
So then what we did
Must
is
the
we
coffee.
Said, here's our choir.
Yeah.
Here are these songs. The songs are all written about Gage Park in Hamilton. Right?
Oh, how lovely.
Gage Park was a place where during the pandemic you could go to the park and walk the trail at a distance. And so it became like, all right, we can't congregate. The choir wants to sing this song, these songs about the park to you. So here they are. Wow. Go to SoundCloud. Wow. Put your headphones on, and we had these little monologues that would stitch them from points around the path.
Can we play that now?
Yeah, I can.
Here it comes. One of the songs for Gage Park.
Beautiful. Yeah,
Written by you and Tressa, or
project's called Without Mass, and I think it's all still on SoundCloud.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole thing. You can listen to the whole thing.
Okay. Here it comes. Without Mass. We'll play a track from that.
Yeah, let's play the Swale Song.
We turn north, north left, and as we sing, some of us could veer off to the right. On the stones of the swale, by the rushes and grasses, our voices spreading out wide into the thin air.
Beautiful. What a project. How rich. A true capital A artiste here, blurring the lines. And you know what I like about you as well is you blur the lines between visual art and music. How do you identify, or does it matter how you identify?
It doesn't matter anymore. Okay. Like, I've tried to make it all one practice.
Great. You've got the name.
Yeah.
That's how you identify.
Yeah.
The bold name.
That's right.
So you do that. That kind of community engagement is amazing. Where does the choir rehearse and when? Like every
so the choir meets right now. We're meeting at a pub called the Cat and the Fiddle, which is a great landmark musical venue in the city. It's been around forever and a day. Closed for a while.
Yeah.
Pre-pandemic, and now it's reopened with amazing new owners. They're every Tuesday. It's like $5. Pay what you can.
Oh wow. Every Tuesday.
Choir. Yeah.
Okay. Every Tuesday night in Hamilton.
Every Tuesday until like mid-May.
Okay. Just give me 1 second. I'm just going to try to quiet down the granddads. Guys, thank you. Okay. So you did a lot though coming out of the pandemic. So can you kind of map us through? You did you've been doing artist residencies and all these interesting things. Like there's almost a metamorphosis of who you are as an artist.
Yeah. So I work with the gallery through the pandemic. The pandemic comes to an end. I'm now my work with Tressa is like we feel like that partnership is rich. So we then started writing our own. We started to write our
Tressa
own.
Tressa lives
project.
Here then in Hamilton. Here. Okay, okay, yeah. Okay. Great. I didn't know that. I should have.
So that's going to drop in the next this little bit this year and into the next year.
A new project.
Story, like it's a suite of songs and it's a story,
oh my God.
It's a storytelling thing. It's going to be it's meant for a stage, I guess. Some kind. We're all being worked out. Actually, at the meter right after this. So
fantastic.
Yeah, so that's happening. And then having kind of got the gallery through the pandemic.
Yeah.
My mother died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Something in the
you had told
in
me
the
that.
Grief
yeah.
of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sort of I don't know, it's sort of like it sort of highlighted or exacerbated the burnout that I was having at work. So then I ended up taking a leave of absence, like a mental health leave, because I was like having these episodes at work where I was shutting down, fully dissociating. It was very creepy.
Wow.
And that was 2022. And
wow.
So I'm on leave, talking with my wife a lot about it. We kind of arrive at the decision that it's probably, I had wanted to like start phasing out of the gallery before the pandemic started. Now I've like given it 2.5 more years.
Was that dissociation that you were mentioning, did that stop during your leave? Like once you were able to kind of take a breath?
It didn't immediately stop. Like so my mom dies about a month later. I start going to work and the experience is just like flattening out. Like I just go, I kind of pretend to look normal.
And you didn't have this before, like this.
I've had them before when I'm stressed, like I've dissociated kind of all through my life, but never so intensely,
and never
in a way that made me really scared. Like,
yeah, no doubt.
What the hell is going on? It's like I go to work and then suddenly I'm home and the work day's over and I don't remember what I've done and I don't really can't account for anything. And
how was your day at work?
I
don't know. You tell me. Tell me, eh? Wow, holy smokes.
Take a leave of absence. Go see a therapist.
Yeah.
Go through that journey, which was weird and good, really good.
Good.
And then, I leave work, calms down a little, still dissociating, but the talk therapy is like pivotal.
Okay.
Yeah. And then kind of arrive at the decision to like shut down my job formally and then I guess what happened is I wrote a theater piece called New Wave Your Behavior, which was about having dissociative episodes going to therapy. Weirdly during that time I developed this kind of mildly pathological reinterest in new wave music, kind of how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
But I started to sort of write this Jungian archetype narrative and thought like, oh, maybe new wave is all Jung's archetypes of the self. Anyway, it's all very convoluted.
Wow.
Anyway, it all jumbles in. I wrote this piece to Fringe, did that, delivered that at Fringe last year. It was really great.
Wow.
And now this
it's nice
year,
to have all of these avenues in Hamilton to plug your ideas into. Like you're just like, I'm going to throw that to Fringe.
Yeah, Fringe is great. It's
that's
run by
fantastic.
Good people. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to get in and test. And now it's going to springboard out so that this year I'll go to Winnipeg and Kingston and maybe a few other places to bring that show, which is good.
Right on.
And then, like you were saying, like at the same time when I knew I was quitting, I started just looking for ways I could expand my visual practice.
Okay.
So I ended up going to Alaska last year for a month. Amazing place called the Bunnell Art Center.
They were great
because they wanted the whole package. When they found out that I did music and performing, suddenly like, okay, come and do your art. But then We're going to team up with the NPR affiliate and do a show. So you'll do a live concert to radio, and then you'll do this. And can you sing in a grocery store because you like these spaces? Yes, sing in
that. Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God.
So it's good. So the end is like, now I'm not working. I'm full-time creative for as long as I can swing it. And
I'm happy for you,
figuring out what comes next.
I'm happy for you. That sounds really beautiful. And that month would have, sounds like it was transformative in a lot of ways.
Huge. Small community, and the people that live there are all people who are like beautiful at guarding creative work.
Yeah,
like I was so humbled. It's an amazing Homer, Alaska is an amazing place. Go there if you can.
Where do you want to go next, though? What's on? You mentioned a lot of places there to take that New Wave show. And so you mentioned a new work with Tressa. Like, that's obviously coming on the horizon. Where do you want to go overall, above and beyond that?
Well, I do have come out of this with a real interest in writing musically for like theater stage or for storytelling. I like the idea of like, here's a suite of stories.
Yeah.
What songs do they? What gets propagated from that musically? Like that is an interesting way of writing songs, and I find it. I'm very excited by that, and I like how, because it effortlessly will push you into different territory.
Sure,
As opposed to like when you're alone with songs, you kind of like Alanis Morissette. It's like, how do I feel? Like, what's my diary say? Like, what's about me? And it's going to be very limited.
Well, I also
I'm not trying to diss Alanis Morissette.
No, I'm not.
Just saying
we all have respect, but yeah. You're. I get you, and I think ultimately that format, not to box you in, but it doesn't box you in. It kind of captures who you are, visual artist. You know, you have. There's many sides to what you do, and I think that's a good kind of platform to express.
Yeah, and it's I like the fusion, I like the hybrids, right?
Yeah,
where
you
know, theater is good because there's a visual aspect to it, there's a sonic aspect to it, there's a written aspect to it, and I'm like, all my life I've been like interested in all those different places, so that's amazing.
Well, this has been a damn joy. You are you're a minimalist. He's finished his black tea and the last bastions of a old fashioned. Did you see the way I scarfed down? I've already scarfed down
too. Amazing. It's impressive. And then like just kept it going as an interviewer.
It scares me though. It scares me the tempo at which I can wolf. Because you're eating civil. I fear it's like related to my heartbeat. You know, I'm getting a little metaphysical here, but we're all here at our own pace, eating our donuts at our own pace. I really appreciate all your work. I've known you for 14 years, probably.
Yeah, easily. Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. I still have great. I have a really good memory of you.
Maybe longer.
Gladstone with your whole
man.
And I don't know how I was connected to that too, but I think I might have been doing like psychic readings.
No. Of course you were. Of course you would have been. I wish you continued success and just more wormholes, all of it. Let's go out. Where can people learn more about your work?
I have a website. So I know like Torley Cassifoss is not the easiest.
They'll find it because if they're listening, if they're listening to this,
torleycassifoss.ca has a website.
There it is. Okay.
So it's, you can see all the visual work. It's also got all your links to the sonic and the performance stuff too.
Great. Go dig in as you would be from the future, listening back, learning what the different eras might have sounded like. I love that. And thanks for a lovely chat. Let's go out listening to the other song that you sent me, which is called
Ain't Got No Blues.
Ain't Got No Blues. Yeah.
Which is the whole line.
There's a sugar line in there.
I ain't got no blues. All I need is sugar. It's good that we're eating donuts because I do have a bit of a problem with sugar because once my appetite for it begins, I'll have it all day long now. It's my sweet tooth will be alive.
Yeah, mine's alive right now. Two donuts in. It's barely 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
God love you. Here it comes now. Ain't Got No Blues. Tor Lukasik Foss. Lukasik.
Thanks, Rich. You. Been a slice.
Ain't got no blues. taste is sugar. Ain't got no blues. All I taste is sugar. Sweet sugar. Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening. Put it in the water, give it to the baby. It's all right. Oh, it's all right. Oh, it's all right. Oh, it's all right. You grow some shit-ass corn. You cut it all down in a heap. You drive it some goddamn place where they mash it up like paste. And they boil it up like juice, like sticky, sticky ooze. That's clear and clean and worthless. It's got no trace of the earth left. It don't taste nothing but sweet. Yeah, don't taste nothing but sweet. Then they pour that devil sugar over every goddamn thing we eat. Got no blues. All I taste is sugar. Ain't got no blues. All I taste is sugar. Sweet sugar. Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening. Put it in the water, give it to the baby. It's all right. Ooh, it's all right. Ooh, it's all right. Ooh, it's all right. I'm soft and mild and precious. And I got no lines or sides or corners or edges. And my arms and my legs and my hands and my feet are no good. And I have to get my mom to come down and chew my food. And I can't so much as hold a word in my teeth. And I can't hold up so much as a belief. Or think of fart using any hard letters. I'm just a sloppy stick of butter, but I never felt better. Ain't got no blues. All I taste is sugar. Ain't got no blues. All I taste is sugar. Sweet sugar. Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening. Put it in the water, give it to the baby. It's all right. Oh, 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 it's all right.
That was Ain't Got No Blues from The Devil Will Give You Candy. If you look on Spotify and some of the other sleazy streaming services, it shows up under Tiny Bill Cody. But make no mistake, that was Tor Lukasik Foss. Get into his body of work. It's incredible. Follow him on social media, etc. And thank you for supporting the show. Thank you to Granddad's Donuts for hosting us that interview. That was very kind. They didn't kick us out. Thank you to CFRU for playing it every Monday at noon. This is Industry Tactics. Go to friendlyrich.com to learn more, and we'll see you again soon.